I need challenges, I need structure, yeah. and that's what baseball gave me.
Okay.
And it gave me an avenue to try to impress chicks.
That's Mike Margema. He's our guest today.
Funny guy.
Funny guy. And it's funny how many of these stories start with a girl, isn't it?
Why does any guy do anything?
I know. All right. Well, we are today, as the song says, talking baseball and is dying to ask. You know what I love about baseball?
What do you love?
I don't love how long it is most nights. No, I love the analogies, life analogies that come out of baseball, and I love quotes. Some of my favorite baseball quotes. Yogi Berra. Baseball is 90% mental, the other half is physical. Love that. It always takes people a second to get that one. And then the other one that's, I think, really applicable to today is Babe Ruth, who said, I swing with everything I got. I hit big or I miss big. I like to live as big as I can. Doesn't that sound like Mike Margema?
That's a good one.
It is good. So Mike is a guy, he dreamed of playing in the major leagues. He did the minor league thing for years, and then eventually he makes it to the Seattle Mariners as a catcher. He's in his late 20s. He is a good-looking guy. I can say that as a married woman, he is. And like, his whole life's coming together, right? But then he took part in, have you ever seen that LeBron James documentary series called Uninterrupted?
I haven't.
It's really, really good. And so he took part in one, and the baseball catcher unmasked himself as someone who had dealt with eating disorders, anorexia, and bulimia his entire life. No one knew. None of his teammates on the Mariners, nobody going through the minor leagues, nobody knew that this guy had dealt with all of that. And then it got more interesting. Within a year, he retired from the major leagues and he made the decision that he wanted to become a spokesperson for the National Eating Disorders Association. And now he's traveling the country telling his story about mental health and about eating disorders. And as a man, that's unusual.
Yeah.
30 million Americans suffer from eating disorders. One in four of those people is a man. You just don't hear about it a lot. So in this Dying to Ask, what Mike Margema says gave him his skewed body image as a teenager, where he was when he quit that major league dream forever. That is an epic backstory. And how he managed to ruin the movie Bull Durham forever for his mom. And maybe me too.
So unfortunate.
So unfortunate. Here's Dying to Ask. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. I write the book, they start the company, they go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast. Mike Margema, thanks for coming on Dying to Ask. We appreciate you coming in.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're so happy to have you here. So I was thinking, you know, baseball players, you always have that warm-up. You have that thing, you got to do the same thing all the time, right? So we have a warm-up for you. You game?
Yeah, you didn't pull up like my walkout song or something like that.
No! Playing, right? Oh my gosh, I should have. What is your walkout song?
Well, I've had a few different ones.
Okay, what was the best one?
Well, no, I mean, you couldn't put it, you know, but it was like the meaning behind the songs weren't sometimes the greatest in my earlier days of my career. I always try to fit it to the crowd. So one of the favorite ones was Sweet Escape by Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
Right, where it would go like, wee! Right? And because everybody in the stands knew it. And so everyone would be going along with it.
That's what you need in a warm-up song.
You need those. You want the crowd interaction for sure. Especially
do you get to pick a different one every game? Is that how it works?
Yeah, you could have a different at-bat. You could have it... You could have as many as you wanted. Well, I take that back.
These are high maintenance.
Yes.
High maintenance. Right. A lot of games, really long night, and high maintenance.
Yeah, well, when you're in the big leagues, you can pretty much... more or less do what you want. When you're back in the minor leagues, they're like, dude, this is your song, here you go, just roll with
this
it.
Is what's next. I may hit play, I may not.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went.
All right, here's your warm-up. Worst mascot.
I always go to being here is like, what was it, Santa Cruz, like banana slugs?
Yeah, that's
right. Right, so it's like, I don't know about that one. But I don't know about like a mascot. I'll give you, won't even go mascot, I'll do a quick little one. First professional baseball game, the announcer, I'm in Bristol, Tennessee, right, where the big NASCAR race is. Okay, there's nothing there except for this NASCAR stadium.
That's all they need there.
That's all they need there. The announcer goes, my first at bat, my dad's staying tuned, first professional at bat. Like, this is going to be the greatest thing ever for a father, for his son. And the radio guy goes, now batting, Michael, peanut butter and jamma. And my dad goes, this is the minor leagues. So very blessed. I don't know about a mascot, but that was the introduction to what my baseball career ended up being.
How many baseball hats do you own?
No, I don't even want to know.
How many?
Over 1,000.
Wow.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
You were right. Jeff said that would be a good question.
You get like a hat like all the time. Like you need a new hat. It's like, hey, I need a new hat. Hey, I need a hat for dad. I'm going to get a hat. Like,
what's your baseball superstition?
Baseball? I got way too many of them.
Give me one.
Oh, gosh.
Do you change your socks every game?
Yeah, I always put my left sock on first. Like, this is going to get bad. I put my left cleat on first. Like, I do it that way. Stepping over the line, like certain tics that I have. I wouldn't say I have OCD, but I'm... that I know of, but I very much am very like, I have some tics that I tap to. I always draw on the dirt. I draw a smiley face and a cross was my little thing after I throw the first ball down to second in the first inning. So
wow,
I have a ton of them, but I would be here for a long time.
We'll do that as a part two. Best baseball movie.
So Bull Durham. Durham. But here's the problem. My mom has always loved Kevin Costner, right?
Everyone's mom loves Kevin Costner.
Everyone's mom loves Kevin Costner.
I'm someone's mom. I love Kevin Costner.
Yeah. And then when your son is the catcher for the Durham Bulls,
yeah,
kind of ruins a movie for your mama. So she goes, I just can't fantasize about Kevin Costner now in Bull Durham.
Well, it had to come to an end. Longest game you ever played?
Oh, my gosh. This was in Hickory, North Carolina. This was the Texas Rangers affiliate. This was when I was with the Chicago White Sox. We were playing. I got run over by Nick Williams, who's now with the Phillies at the plate. I think I have a concussion. We're in the 14th inning.
I think I have a concussion. My ball.
We'll finish the story really quick. It starts raining. It's a Friday night, and in minor league stadiums, they're like, look, we got to shoot off the fireworks. Everyone's here for the fireworks. Right. Like, it's starting to rain. We got to shoot them off. So they turn off the lights in the 14th inning in a tie game. I just get run over at the plate. I'll just give you a thing. I have a concussion in the dugout. Fireworks are going off. Boom, boom. My head is ringing. Then they say, oh, fireworks are over. We're going to turn the lights back on, and we're going to finish the game.
Jeez.
It went 18 innings. 5 coaches were ejected. 3 players were ejected. And we ended up losing that game. So all that for an L.
Did a pitcher pitch?
There were probably about 5 position players that pitched that game. It was hell.
Oh, I love minor league stories. Okay, last question. How many years did you think you would play in the majors?
I didn't even think I was going to play in the majors, to be honest with you.
But you did.
I did.
Yeah. And that's what brings us to here today, because you have now gone a different direction after reaching that incredible goal. And what is your job these days? Let's talk a little bit about, you made a, after getting to the majors, you made a major change after reaching what most people would think is the pinnacle of what you had worked for so many years. And that was what?
I don't even know. I don't even know what that's kind of gotten into as of late. You know, so there's a lot. So really being an advocate, you know, really for mental health and really health in general. I mean, talking about youth sports, unhealthy activity. So I dealt with a lot of struggles in my past, whether it be from eating disorders or many of them eating disorders, depression, anxiety, a lot of mental health issues, which a lot of stem from physical stuff as well. So dealing with a lot of those and trying to manage on what it's like to live a healthy and what I would say is a good life. Like, we're all kind of in search for that. Like, what does it mean to live a life of purpose, or what is it to live a good life? And, you know, playing in the big leagues, for me, there were oftentimes, even later in my career, it was tough for me to play baseball and have the satisfaction that I was having. And I think it was more or less of it became a career and it became a job rather than it became the love of actually playing the game.
You made it to the majors and you were playing in Seattle. Did anybody have any idea of what you were actually dealing with? Because on the outside, I'm guessing, like, if I see you on the outside, if I see you on the evening news, I'm thinking, like, there's this good-looking 20-something-year-old professional baseball player. He's got it made. He's got it all. But what was the reality of what was actually happening behind the scenes, or what you were feeling about the whole thing?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. Like, so when you first get up, like, a lot of people, I don't know if they know the full details of it, but, you know, you're not on a guaranteed contract. you know, it's kind of a day-to-day thing. And so every day you're really stressed out. I'll give you a great example. So we had opening day. I started opening day. We're facing the Cleveland Indians at home. And we have a few games at home. And then we come to San Francisco. And it's the first time I played professionally at AT&T here. And playing the Giants, which, you know, kind of grew up a Giants fan. I have a different respect for Giants fans now being an opposing player in San Francisco. They're harsher than I remember when you're on that side.
Right. You're not wearing orange. It's not necessarily a good day.
No.
No.
And I just remember after a game, it was opening day for them, and I remember sitting there going back to my hotel room, and my parents and whole family was here because we're all from the area. And I remember I'm on my iPad, I'm on my phone, I have my laptop open, I'm looking over scouting reports for the next day, and my family's like, hey, let's go out to dinner. And I'm like, no, I can't go. I have a massage therapist in my room that's working on my knees because my knee is hurting. I'm up there looking over scouting reports the whole entire night. And I was like, I didn't enjoy what I was doing at the time. And I think because of the stress that I was putting on myself. But that's a lot of what I've done my whole entire life is when I go into something, I go all in. Mm-hmm. I don't kind of, you know, tiptoe into something. It's like if I'm in it, I'm in it, which has kind of been my best friend and my worst enemy. So, you know, a lot of the things that you deal with personality-wise are, you know, very hard. That's why a lot of guys in the big leagues that are very successful really have short memories. So, yeah, it was tough for me to deal with the things at the time. And like you said, you know, a lot of the people that put on a facade or put on a mask oftentimes are dealing with something underneath. And for me, it's, you know, I use the analogy of being like unmasked. When I take off my catcher's mask, like, you know, you could kind of see the things that were going on.
If I'm in it, I'm in it.
Yeah.
It's good, right?
I mean, it is good.
Relate to that. So we're going to take a quick timeout, not like a rain delay in baseball or anything that can go on forever. This is just like a quickie timeout. And when we come back, Mike's a perfectionist. Like, that comes across instantly. And that's what made him a really good baseball player. Makes any athlete good. But it was also a huge contributing factor in his eating disorder. So he's going to share the moment. He's going to break this down, share the moment when he started feeling less than around other kids. And then what he did specifically to his body to cut weight and to get ripped.
First on the scene.
Flames ripped through a Modesto business.
First with the facts.
And one suspect is in custody.
So you're first to know. KCRA 3 News at 4.
Your first chance to get up to speed.
We are the people and we are the power.
To learn what's happening right now.
Another spot fire breaking out across Highway 20.
And to help you prepare for what's next.
When it happens in Northern California, get it first at 4 from the team you trust. KCRA 3 News at 4, where the news comes first.
How many different minor league teams did you play for?
Ooh, boy.
You want to rattle them out? Would that be fair?
So I say it's like, I started here, well, Tac City College, and I went to La Crosse Loggers. Then I went Long Beach State, so then Orlean Firebirds, so I played in that Cape Cod League. Then my first assignment was Bristol, Virginia, Tennessee, Virginia. That state line runs down the middle of State Street there. So Bristol, Great Falls, Extended Spring Training, Phoenix, Kannapolis, North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Then I went to Port Charlotte, Florida. Then I went to Montgomery, Alabama. Then I went to Durham, North Carolina. Then I went to Tacoma, Washington. Then I played for the Mariners.
Durham's where you ruined Bull Durham for your mother.
Yes, Durham is where I love that city. Duke is there. North Carolina's there.
That's a great
I happen
stadium
to be
there, actually.
Unbelievable.
So cool.
It's great,
so
stadium. Cool. Great atmosphere. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So like to get to the majors, you sacrifice a lot. And as fun as the stories are from the minors, like, it's not an easy life.
No.
No.
No. I think for 7 years, I made probably about $7,000 a year into my, you know, mid to late 20s. And, you know, I think that not everyone understands what it's like. And, you know, that's, you know, making $1,500 a month for 6 months out of the year and you know, sharing rooms. I remember having a lot of my Dominican friends. And, I mean, I had a lot of my three of my Dominican friends in the living room. I was sharing a room with a guy, and we had a two-bedroom place, and we had another guy sharing a room. And those are the times that you never forget. But people are like, you know, would you change it? I'm like, heck yeah, I would change it. Like, would I want to be doing it like this? No, I wish I could have my own room. Like, people are like, you get to travel on the road. I'm like, yeah, you're sharing a room with somebody. Like, it's great, but... Yeah. You're also like, you don't really have time to just reflect for yourself.
Right.
And that was just going off before you go to the ballpark to a coffee shop or something to try to find some peace in the hotel lobby. And, you know, those type of things are things that people, you don't see.
Right.
You get to see us put on a uniform or run out on the field, but you don't get to see the 14-hour bus ride it took us overnight to get there.
Mm-hmm. If we're lucky, we see the fireworks of that minor league game.
Exactly.
So how many years in the minors?
So I spent, 7 years in the minors. Then I got called up. Then I was up, sent back down. So I probably did about 8.5, 9 years in the minors.
So when you get that call and they say, you know, you're going in for the Mariners now, you've made it. What's that like? And is it a phone call? How do you find out about something like that?
So I got called into our manager's office. So Pat Lestash calls me in, who's my manager in Tacoma, and said, hey, you...
Is that usually like a you're out or you're in kind of?
Yeah, but yeah. You knew. Like, okay. I knew why. Like, I wasn't playing bad. So I got called in, and he just said, hey, I know it's been a tough run for us. We were struggling as a team at the time. And he goes, you know, but it's going about to get a lot better because you're in the big leagues. And, you know, that's all great. That wasn't the root. You know, that people are like, oh, your manager, Scott Service, you know, we were about to go out for a game this last spring training. And, you know, he told me I made the opening day roster. And, you know, that's all great and dandy and fun. And, starting opening day, my parents are flying up for opening day, and I didn't know I was starting the game till about 3 hours before the game started. I found out Mike Zunino was hurt, and I tell you all those to say the best phone calls or the best meeting didn't come from a manager. It came from my phone call to my parents.
Yeah.
And I remember calling my dad when I first got called to big leagues, and I FaceTime him, and I'm trying to play it cool, you know, like, hey, how's everything going? You know, how's everything in the house? And all of a sudden he goes, you know, I'm like, hey, well, I know things are tough, but you know, I just want to let you know your son's a big leaguer. And he just started like drops the phone, starts screaming, you know, and I just won't forget that memory. And I won't forget like my parents flying up, and they land in Seattle for opening day. They flew up that morning. And I remember them landing, and they finally get service again. And my mom looks at her phone and goes like, holy, like, Michael started, you know? And so it's like, they're like freaking out now. Like, this is just totally different. And, you know, so those were the calls that meant something to me
and
more than anything.
For your parents, knowing what you had dealt with as a kid, it probably meant that much more to them, I'm sure. Because what was it that they knew about you that your teammates, yeah, your coach certainly didn't know?
Well, so they knew everything, right? So they went through my hospitalization where I was pulled out of baseball in high school, where I couldn't play baseball in high school. They were with me along the journey, right? There's young Mike growing up, coming out of the womb. You know, oftentimes my mom's like, you know, like, I brought you into this world, I can take you out. I'm like, please don't take me out the same way I came in, you know, like, like, I'm all good. You know, but she does, they're my support system. My family is everything to me.
Yeah.
And they are the people that have been through it. And I think everyone understands, you know, a message I'm sure we'll touch on more is like, everyone has problems. And having a support system is so crucial. And we can't do it alone. We need help. And we need the people around us to be able to do that. And that's what some people have, don't have great relationships with their family. And their adopted family really becomes like their friends,
mm-hmm,
and their group that they surround themselves with. And for me, it's always been just kind of my family. And I have never really had a big group of friends, but I've always had a very strong and expansive family.
So let's go back many, many years. And how did your parents realize that you were dealing with an eating disorder? What were the because it's unusual in that you don't hear about a lot of young boys dealing with this.
Yeah, so my mom is a provider. She's an NPOBGYN here, mm-hmm, at Kaiser Permanente in Roseville. And a lot of her friends, a lot of providers, a lot of doctors and nurses and the whole team kind of knew things were off. I think great examples would be sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner, right? There's big elaborate Thanksgiving dinners, and you sit down with this, and my family loves to cook, and we have big family gatherings. Well, when these big family gatherings, everyone's bringing things, or there's, you know, hours and hours of cooking this great food. And I would sit down and, you know, throw some carrots and, you know, some celery or something on my plate, maybe a handful of almonds.
You're what age at this point?
And I was... I was 16 at that time. Well, look in grade school, right? What was the best period during grade school? The best part of the day? Recess. Duh. It was like, I get to go outside and play. Great.
It's
and
up, so still is.
Yes. And who, what do all the kids play at recess? They play tag, right? And so I had this great fascination. I was like, I'm going to tag the cutest girl on the schoolyard. And then, like, she's going to tag me, right? Like, slow motion matrix. Like, I'm falling backwards, and she's going to reach out and tag me and, like, fall on top of me, and we're face to face, and, like, it's going to be perfect. And that never happened, right? I was never getting tagged. I was never getting attention. And I was like, well, what the heck? Like, why can't I get a girlfriend? Why doesn't anybody notice me? Well, and then you fast forward, and you get to, like, junior high school, Abercrombie becomes big, right? And everyone's carrying around their lunches and gym clothes and Abercrombie bags, and their shirts are off, and these guys are all just chiseled, and all the girls are like, and you're just like, bingo, all I gotta do is look like that. But everything that I'm seeing is like, just work out, just work out, just work out,
this
just work out.
High.
Yeah.
You know what's so interesting is around the time you would have been in junior high is when all that controversy came out about Abercrombie and those bags. But none of that was talking about boys.
Mm-mm.
It was all about the girls and how are the girls supposed to look.
Absolutely. Very stigmatized. This topic is still very stigmatized. And it's a poor representation.
Abercrombie is never sponsoring this podcast, either way.
Yes.
I don't see this happening.
But they are. But and it's just taking awareness. We all, like, there's always been things. There are things that are constantly being adjusted to doing things new and doing things the right way. And things that we thought were right may not be right.
So it's challenging ourselves. You see these media images, and you're like, well, I need a six pack, and then I'm gonna get tagged.
Yep. Yeah, and I got cut. I still go back to the junior high school, and I give the PE teacher / basketball coach some hell for cutting me from the basketball team 2 years in a row. I wear my jersey in there too when I walk in there. And like, look, you cut this guy. But I got cut from the basketball team. One of my friends was like, hey, you're really driven. You work your butt off. Why did you thought about wrestling? And I was like, no, but like, okay, whatever. I'll go wrestle. Like, I'll try it. And it was kind of a way for me to obsess about something. And they started throwing out numbers and weight and how you can cut weight. And I was like, oh, now, like, not only can I work out, now I can put these into my regimen and that'll get me there.
It's almost like you had a plan then.
And so I created a plan.
List out some of the ways that things you were doing as a teenager to try to drop weight or to control your eating that would maybe surprise people. Like, how extreme was it?
Oh, really? So a lot of that's hidden. A lot of that is hidden for people with eating disorders aren't dumb. They actually
tend to be quite
they
bright.
Tend to be the smartest people in the room, statistically. So, that's a part of my mission too, is getting those people like to be very high functioning, back to where their capabilities are, and what that can mean to our society. I think would be not only them individually, but as a society, would be fantastic. But really, it's looking into I would cut class, go work out, tape trash bags and wear layers of sweatshirt and sweatpants and ride a stationary bike in the steam until I'd pass out of the shower.
In the shower you would do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, those are like old school wrestling tactics, right? That we thought were like, oh, that's just part of it. Like, no, that's not like, yeah, that was part of it. That's not how it should be. Really over-exercising. So we'd say that, really over-exercising is a thing that many men fall into, is coping with problems. We overdo things and women do it as well, over-exercise. And so if you work out a lot and not eat anything, right, I won't get fat, but I'll get big and strong. And we see that a lot. How many times you go to the gym and you run on the treadmill and all you do is look at the little calorie counter and go, oh, I had this many calories for my lunch. All I got to do is wait till that thing gets there and I've just burned it off, right? Like, that's an unhealthy way of looking at it. And so we've taken that into where I'd pull the extremes into my workouts, like wear trash bags and duct tape them to my body and things like that. So, and then, looking at how I could maybe chew on ice cubes because it make me feel like I'm eating and all I'm really doing
is
drinking
water.
This
is all stuff you're doing as a, teenager, 13 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. And does anyone have any idea that you're doing this at this point?
Yeah. I mean, people are noticing, right? Everyone's noticing, but they see it's normal. So this is where, like, the masculine side is where people, I think, especially in the eating disorder world, still don't understand, which I'm hoping to enlighten them on, is we talk to ourselves as coaches, we talk as men, but we're men because like people don't see it as wrong with us because we're working hard. Hey, like you're a hard worker. You're doing it for your sport. That doesn't mean it's healthy. So it's looking at things that we're doing and saying like, wait, yeah, he's working hard, but he's also not being very smart about it.
It got bad enough that your parents actually checked you in.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Oh, gosh. I was seeing a therapist at the time. So my mom had tried a personal trainer. That wasn't working. He'd tell me eat more food. I was like, yeah, no chance, buddy. And so they put me on a plan. That didn't work. They put me in a therapist. I ended up losing a lot of weight in the matter of about 2 days. I lost about 15 pounds in 2 days. So they said, hey, you can't leave this room. We need to put you on a stretcher, pretty much. So they put me on a stretcher, wheel me out of the room. And I'm like, this is stupid. They take me to an inpatient facility here in Sacramento, which was where kids had either tried to commit suicide or they had overdosed. So you're a threat to yourself and or others. There's no doors, facility. And I remember being in there and being like, guys, I just want a six pack. Like, I'm not trying to kill myself. I'm not trying to kill someone else. Like, I don't need to be here. And then one of the counselors, therapists in there goes like, but you are. And I didn't realize, like, I have heart arrhythmias. Like, my heart's about to shut down. Like, I have no fuel. And my body's just eating at itself.
Did you look emaciated
no.
at that point?
No.
That's an important point, I think.
For sure.
When we come back, throwing himself out of the game forever. How Mike made that decision to quit Major League Baseball only 1 year after achieving his dream, and the backstory on where he was when he picked up the phone and he made that call.
KCRA3, your best choice for news at 11.
Live team coverage tonight.
No Sacramento station covers Northern California better than KCRA3.
We have breaking news on that rescue.
With resources to bring you the story wherever it happens.
Get those cameras away from me!
And detailed perspectives you won't see anywhere else.
Livecopter 3 shows that fire burning.
The experience you've come to trust every night.
Here's what we know right now.
Your best choice for news at 11. KCRA3, where the news comes first.
How did you make that decision? I'm done. And what I really want to do is I want to speak out for other men.
Because I think it's this way. When you I grinded really hard. And I don't say that in a negative sense. Like I'm very spiteful for it. I don't view it that way. I viewed it as baseball has taught me a lot of life lessons and a lot of character, right? It's a game of failure. You're going to fail no matter what, but it's how you deal with those failures. So now it's like I get to use those as opportunities to really grow into something else. So getting to the big leagues was awesome, but like I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what car you drive. I don't care whatever you want to talk about. That's just outside. That's superficial. Like, that doesn't matter. I talked to someone recently that said, like, look, I have more money than I know what to do with. I wouldn't have to work a day in my life, but I would trade all of that to have my family be closer because I don't have a relationship with my family.
So when you went in,
that to me speaks more about in the big leagues. I don't care if you're in the big leagues. I don't care if you have fame. I don't care if you have money. I don't care about any of that. Are you happy with where you're at? And are you okay with being in that position? And if you're not, I'm not going to be that guy that's going to sit there and just be like, okay, I'm going to sit here and collect a paycheck, or I'm going to sit here and get this. It's like, no, what is going to feed my soul? Because like we talked about earlier before we even came on, is like you have a limited amount of time on this earth. I don't know when I'm going to be taken out. But I'll be damned if I am like get in a car accident and I mistakenly pass away right now, that my last day isn't doing something that I really want to be doing, right? Like your passion, your purpose, and having that mission in your life for what you really want to do is going to drive you. So waking up every morning, you're not rolling out of bed going like, oh my gosh, I got to do this again. It's like, I get to do this again. And you get to walk in that room in a whole different vibe. And when I started feeling like I lost that, it was like, okay, I need to give back in some way, or I need to do something that's going to really inspire me going forward.
So when you went in and you told your team, I'm leaving and this is what I'm going to
do. I called them in my truck.
You did.
I was driving south, actually. This is a funny story. So I got a I went on a rehab assignment to Everett, which was just north of Seattle. And this is the rookie ball team. So all the guys that just signed in pro ball, right? And so a big leaguer walking in there, they're like, hey, like, okay, like, Mike, what do you got about, like, what do you got on this? How do you do your swing? How do you approach?
And I had, you have all the answers now, right?
And I had more fun. And like, little do they know, like, I'm a mess, right? Like upstairs, I'm a mess. But I'm sitting there going like, I have more fun working with these guys and just like mentoring them and giving them insight and almost like coaching them I had more fun doing that than I was actually having playing. And I was like, well, why, what in the world am I, like, I was like, I packed up my truck the next morning and I was driving south. And our farm director, Andy McKay, who's actually from Sacramento here, he calls me up and goes, hey, you know, do you think you'd be in Albuquerque? Like, we could use some help in the big, but we need to get you on your track. And I said, well, I'm sorry, Andy, to inform you, but I'm on the Oregon-Washington border right now, about to come into Portland. I'm driving back to California. I'm kind of done playing. And that was the phone call. He's like, are you sure? He's like, he's known me for years. So he's like, I'm not talking him out of this. Cause he knows, like, when I'm in, I'm in, when I'm out, I'm out. And so, that's how the phone call went. And this is the first time. Another like thing is like my parents every summer, they take a vacation to the Central Coast of California. And I haven't been able to go in 13 years because of baseball. This is the first summer that I was able to go take that vacation with them in 13 years. So those are little things you don't see that happen in the baseball life. And, you know, missing my grandfather's 80th birthday and you know, then finally having an opportunity to see my parents like that. It's, I get to experience some of those things again.
You took part in LeBron James has this great series called Uninterrupted, featuring athletes talking about things that maybe you don't expect them to talk about. And you took part in one really, like, in my opinion, a really raw episode where you talked about your eating disorder and the impact that it had on your life growing up and that it continued to have. Did your teammates know about any of that before it came out?
Nope.
How'd that go?
Very supportive. Very supportive. D. Gordon is an amazing guy. You know, not a lot of people know about his philanthropic work on the things that he does. And shooting the documentary was, you know, it was amazing. I had shared my story before, but apparently when you get to the major leagues, people actually start caring about your problems.
Maybe a bigger audience.
A bigger audience, for sure. But, you know, we were able to use this great vehicle for, you know, delivering a message that, you know, has been able to reach a lot of people. And I get messages all the time on Instagram or Twitter, on Facebook, and get people that reach out to me all the time saying, hey, men, to say I've had this for 20, 30 years and I've never been able to reach out. And really the surprising thing is more and more women that relate to my story as well and say, you know what, like I've had this forever and you're inspiring me to get help. So the countless messages that I get just off this one documentary is kind of shown just really how amazing it is. And then it's really given me a vehicle to kind of, you know, drive going forward here, you know, to invoke some more change.
Were teammates supportive?
Yes, very much so. So I think what we often see is we glamorize athletes. We expect all our athletes, and if you look at body image, we expect all our athletes to look like the Spartans from 300,
yeah.
Right? And if they don't, aka like Pablo Sandoval, they're yeah. somehow at a disadvantage, which is totally not true. So I can tell you, I've showered with the best athletes in the world. I can tell you right now, it's Dad Bod Central. Like, it's not like what everyone glamorizes it to be, right? But we live in a society right now where it's very, if you go on any sort of advertisement, it's a guy with, you know, 2% body fat that is this, and that's exactly because he eats this protein bar.
Right.
That ain't, he don't eat that protein bar. I promise you.
Yeah.
So it's, Our teammates, you know, they more than anything, they realize that we all have problems. They struggle with problems. They deal with things too. Everyone has their own issues, and that's okay. It's being able to address those and being able to get the help that you need. And if you can come out and talk about those things, I've had former teammates. I've got guys in the NFL, NBA, MLB, definitely in fighting, boxing, have reached out to me saying, hey, you know what, like, we appreciate you sharing your message.
Because I would think, and I say this having covered 10 Olympics and being around a lot of different kind of athletes, that there are a lot of things that you attribute to, this is just the way the sport is because it's what the sport demands on a physical level, that are normalized because of that. And it's got to be magnified with men.
Absolutely. So we often say, like, men, we talk to ourselves as coaches. So we'll say we talk to ourselves and we're like, you're not good enough. Or like, Lord forbid you say, like, wow, I actually did that good. Or like, good job, Mike. Like, that was awesome.
What do you say instead? Because when you walked in today, I complimented you on the LeBron documentary.
Yeah.
I thought you communicated your message so well. But your instant thing that you said was not that.
No. So when I look back at it, and I've been on The Doctors, I've been on multiple TV shows, and every time I look back on them, I mean, even the documentary, I'm like, man, I wasn't very good. Like, I didn't articulate my message that good. Like, I've gotten a lot better at really explaining and really highlighting the things that should be talked about, and really the good details and the stories, and that's going to make sure that the message gets portrayed in the right way. And I didn't feel like I did that in any of those. And I'm like, well, what the heck was I doing there? And then I started noticing, like, whoa, but everyone's complimenting me on how good it was. Well, what am I? Am I just critiquing myself right now, thinking that I'm not good enough? And it's like, how many times have I talked to myself that way? And we do it, men and women, we do it all the time. We talk to ourselves. I've told myself worse things than anybody's ever going to tell me, by far. So I don't ever imagine a time when I can't even think back to a time when I was like, man, I was really positive with myself. Now having to make conscious effort to do that, it's actually made me a more positive person, not only to myself, but to others.
So what do you, where do you see this going? Take us through, where's your next 5 years? I mean, you knew where your last five was with baseball. That was the beauty of sports, is that there's such a structure to it.
Yeah.
There's no structure now.
No, there's no structure.
Is that just awful?
It is awful. It is, I'll be complete. I'm not. And there's a special person in my life that is trying to challenge me to be more vulnerable and be more open. And I'm scared. I'm nervous. I am wildly stressed at times. And I have to go to these mindfulness coping skills I've learned, but I don't know what it entails. There aren't many men speaking out about mental health and trying to create like a what the healthy masculine traits that we can really exhibit, you know, that will really empower other men and women, and that's scary because I don't know what it looks like. But I'll tell you, there's really like three main areas for me that are really the focuses for the next few months and over the next year. Those are really inspiring youth programs. We're looking at putting youth programs in place that will allow kids to just be active and healthy and give them the resources that they need to just be active and healthy. We know obesity is a big crisis right now, and always has been, but we're really looking at how we can tackle that really at the early ages and give kids some coping skills and active skills. So it's definitely working on youth programs, especially media literacy as well. The other one is going to be with athletics and really tying into sports and how we can be better about the sporting industry and how our coaches aren't calling our young girls fat when they're at their practices and how they're actually talking to their players. That's going to be another area of focus, and how we can make athletes be more than athletes, which is a mission we have at Uninterrupted. So when they get out of the game, they're not so really tarnished, and their life isn't consumed by it. So that's another area of focus. And then really mental health in general. I'm not really talking about just eating disorders or depression or anxiety. We want to cover all of it. We want to cover health in general, and especially mental health, and giving people the tools. We've had traumas. Everyone's had trauma in some way, so it's dealing with those in a healthy way. So those would be the three areas, you know, would be for young kids and in sporting programs.
You still love baseball? So
I do love baseball. Right now would be the time I'd be really diving into getting ready for spring training and getting with the guys. So I miss it for sure. I miss it. But what I'm doing now is having a mom tell me that, you know, spending time with her was the best time she's had since, you know, her son passed away from an eating disorder, or someone said I've inspired them to get help, or, you know, those are just a few examples of, no matter what. If I ever hit a home run again, or the feeling I ever got hitting a major league home run, I only hit one. I struck out like a lot. So we won't have to discuss those, but that one feeling, that one home run, was great. But there's no feeling like having somebody say that you've inspired them.
4
a.m. It's a new day. Okay, so the roosters aren't even awake yet. But KCRA 3 Morning News is. If it happened overnight, Deirdre, Teo, Tony, and Ty have got it covered. Tamara's forecast is so accurate, your day practically plans itself. And Melody monitors the roadways so you always have the best routes to work. It may be too early to see the sun, but you can always see the 3 and get the 3. News, weather, traffic. KCRA 3 from 4 to 7, where the news comes first.
All right, Jeff, just you, me, and the millions of people listening to this right now. As a guy, what was your take?
It's really interesting. I feel like when he said it's very stigmatized, that's the truth of the matter. It's not something that guys talk about. It's not something that we acknowledge half the time.
Yeah. Did you love it when you talked about the dad bods in the shower?
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was a good laugh I got out of you. Okay, Mike's website is mikemarjama.com. He's on Instagram at mike.marjama and on Facebook at michael.marjama. Okay, we had a huge milestone over the holidays. Mm-hmm. Big thing on iTunes. We passed the 100 rating mark. What does that mean? Devin, our boss, raised the bar.
He
said, I want you to get to 100. We did that, thanks to you. And now he wants us to get to 200. So if you could do us a favor, get Devin off our back. Review us on iTunes or Google Play or any of those podcasty places. And then if you could tell at least 2,000 of your friends to listen, Devin will leave us alone. And that's good for all of us. Trust me on that. Our listener of the week is Run Kimmy Run, who said on our iTunes ratings, love Deirdre and Jeff. And she spelled my name right, too. Love that.
Yes.
That's huge.
Did she spell my name right?
Yeah, with a G. Yes, she did, as a matter of fact. Great host. I love the broad spectrum of people they interview. Keeps it interesting and entertaining for sure. Thank you, Kimmy. And I love that you're out there running. Nice. Listen to us when you're running. You know where we're really entertaining, though? The gram. You can follow Jeff on Instagram at Producer Jeff. Yep. I'm on at Run Read Sip. And then the show can be found on Instagram at Dying to Ask Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.